You're listening to season 4 of the Business of Teaching Yoga podcast, hosted by me, Cora Giroux. I've been practicing yoga since I was a teenager, been teaching since 2009, and training, coaching, and mentoring yoga teachers since 2014. I believe that life and business are supposed to be fun, and that your business is unique just like you, and that if you get the inside right, whether that comes to your practice, your business, or the rest of life, the outside will fall into place. If you'd like to work together, I offer one-on-one coaching and consulting for yoga teachers, as well as my group business program, Lost to Launch, several times a year. You can find all the deets on my website, www.coragiroux.com. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Business of Teaching Yoga podcast. I'm having so much fun being back behind the mic, podcasting and connecting with all of you. Massive, massive thank you to you if you listen to this show regularly. We've had nearly 8,000 downloads in the last 30 days. So boom, that's amazing. You know, I'm a small-time podcaster. I'm not famous in any way, shape, or form. So knowing that you all are listening and hopefully finding some sort of value from the show just makes me smile. And I love doing it. So I'm so happy to be back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for still tuning in after that long hiatus that we took, or I took, earlier this year. And if you have been listening to the last couple of episodes, you will know or be familiar with today's sponsor, which is Kajabi. Kajabi is the place where I host my entire online business. So it's my website, it's my video host, it's my online course platform, it is my community forum. What else is Kajabi? It's my email service provider. Essentially, it is almost a one-stop shop for my business. And quite a few of you actually jumped on board that special that they had going on last month where you got 3 months for $99. So quite a few of you have actually signed up through one of the links I provided. So amazing. Thank you. If you signed up, thanks for using my link. If you are a course creator or you do one-on-one coaching, or you are thinking about having a membership site, I do think that Kajabi is one of the best platforms out there for yoga teachers. It's not perfect. There are things that I wish Kajabi had that it doesn't. But I think when you're looking at your options overall, Kajabi really, really, you get a lot for your money. One of my favorite things about Kajabi is that it's all in one. This is something that I talk about a lot because I'm not really a tech person. And I also get overwhelmed quite easily when there are a lot of moving pieces to things. And so having everything in one place has allowed me to have a lot more peace of mind in my business. So one of my favorite things that I would love to share with you is the way that your community is handled on Kajabi. So if you think about someone officially putting their hand up and saying, hey, I want to be a part of your community, the first thing that really happens is they sign up to your email list, right? So you might be on my email list. And if so, when you have put your details into, you know, whatever website it is you're using, you then have Cora Giroux on your email list or whoever it is. One of the things that I love about Kajabi is that as soon as someone makes that first step with you in your business, they join your email list, you get a profile for that person right inside of Kajabi. You can see when they joined your email list. You know, you can see which emails you've sent to them. You can see if they have purchased anything from you. You can see their payment history, and all of this information you can see in one place, which is one of the big things that has made life easier for me as a business owner. I know when I had a different email service provider and a different website. Like I used to use ConvertKit, which I think they're great for if you just need an email service provider. I think ConvertKit is pretty good. I used to have ConvertKit and Squarespace and MemberSpace. And together that was sort of like, you know, MemberSpace and Squarespace for my website and my course and my community. And then people signed up and I emailed them through ConvertKit. But it was really tricky to see if the same person had purchased something or when they signed up. And it got really confusing when we were managing a lot of different members and even just subscribers. And you can also track cool things like, you know, if someone jumped on your email list 6 months ago and then became a client or a student, or did they jump on your email list last week and then all of a sudden become a client? So you can really start to figure out who your community is and have a better level of care for the people in your community. There's all sorts of other amazing automations you can do. Like if someone opens an email, you can give them a tag like interested in yoga classes. Or if someone takes a different action, you can automate all of these different things. It's a really great way to manage your members. Okay, so that's my spiel on Kajabi. I know, as I said, a couple of you have already signed up, which is amazing. Right now, one of the offers that they have available is a 30-day free trial. So I will put a link in the show notes to this. But you can also just go to my website, coragiroux.com/Kajabi. You can click on the links through there. And I believe that on their homepage, I think if you sign up just via their homepage, it's a 14-day free trial. But if you use my link, which is an affiliate link, full disclosure, then you can get an extra 14 days for 30 days in total. So that's it. I hope you find a good platform for your needs. Maybe it's Kajabi. if so, link is in the description. And then otherwise, let's get into today's episode. Okay, so today's episode is with Nick Danu. And I'm sure that some of you know Nick already. I'll read a little bit about Nick before we get into a few more different things. So Nick is a fiercely independent Sagittarius, misfit, introvert, bookworm, cat charmer. I need a cat charmer in my life right now. Crow whisperer, Buddhist, seeker of truth, peaceful warrior, and pro activist who's not so secretly out to save the world. Nick teaches therapeutic yoga to misfits, Gen Xers, and sometimes Y, who don't feel at home in mainstream yoga circles. You know, the rebels, underdogs, introverts, geeks, and bookworms. I could totally put myself into that category for sure. As a yoga therapist, Nick's specialty is helping people with back pain and anxiety. Now, Nick did her first teacher training in 2003. At least that's what it says on her website. So Nick, if you're listening to this and that's not correct, please feel free to correct me. But since then, Nick has done extensive studies in yoga, yoga therapy, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, anatomy, and meditation. If you look at the certifications page on Nick's website, it's like ginormous. This person, human being, has done so much training and has so much wisdom to share on yoga, but also business, which is what we're going to talk about today. Nick and I actually had a conversation about niching, like finding your niche or your niche. You'll hear in this episode how you actually are supposed to pronounce niche. But anyhow, we also speak about why your niche isn't the style of yoga you teach, the three elements that make up your niche. Nick's answer to the question, is it ever too early to niche? I put a little thing out on Instagram and asked some of you, I'm sure some of you follow me on Instagram as well, what questions you had about niching. And that was one of the questions that came in from Instagram. Is it too early to niche? So Nick actually answers that question. I think it's a pretty awesome answer. Powerful questions to help you uncover your niche right now. So like if you're listening to this episode, it might be one of those ones that you want to get like a pen and a pencil out and some paper. I don't know why you need both of those writing instruments, but something to write with. And if you're like, I'm driving, girl, that's cool. You could just put a little pin in it, save this episode and come back to it if niching is something that you're working on. I'm sure it probably is if you're listening to this episode. Why demographics are the least important part of your niche. And inside of Lost to Launch, the business course I teach, we talk about this as well. Like demographics can be useful, but they're really the least important thing when you're thinking about a niche. So if you've ever thought, but like, I don't want to just limit myself to teaching women in their 60s or, you know, or single moms or, you know, these sorts of things. Nick and I totally agree that that's the least important part of what your niche is. So if you feel like you don't want to put yourself in that box, then we got you. We also talk about why getting out of your head and into your heart might be the key to finding your perfect niche. How you can get super specific with your niche while still being inclusive. And I'm not sure if that question came in on Instagram, but I know that I have had conversations with many of you listeners, students, clients of mine that struggle with that. They're like, I want to be inclusive. I don't want to say I only work with, you know, as I just said, like women in their 60s. I want to work with everyone, or I don't want to exclude anyone. And so Nick has really thought about this and I'm glad she has, because I was like, I don't really know what to tell you on that. So how you can get really, really specific on what your niche is without excluding people. Why your deepest wounds are often your truest niche. This is interesting. I feel like some of you might inherently, intuitively know that that possibly is true for you. Nick talks quite a bit about that. And Nick's thoughts of if and when you can successfully have more than one niche. Like, what if you want to teach yoga for volleyball players, but you also want to teach your mom and her friends? That's a real client. If you're listening to this, you know who you are. I think you're doing both of those really well at the moment. So I hope you enjoy this conversation on niching with Nick Danu. Hey, Nick, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I think that some of our listeners may already be aware of you and what you do. I know I've listened to a couple of great interviews with you on different podcasts already, but just in the off chance that someone is new to you and new to your work, would you mind sharing just a little bit about who you are, what you do, and if you feel like it, what your niche is currently?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Nick Danu. I am a yoga therapist, certified yoga therapist, and a yin yoga teacher trainer, as well as a yoga business mentor. I've also, of course, worked with the public. And so I'll kind of just very briefly touch on all three of those niches because they're all different things. So as far as the general public, as far as students go, I work with what I call yoga misfits, which I define as Gen Xers and sometimes Y, who don't feel at home in mainstream yoga circles, the alternative folks, the rebels, the underdogs, the punks, the introverts, the geeks, and the bookworms. So they're basically the people that would definitely not identify themselves as a, air quotes, yoga person. And with those people, my specific zones of genius or areas of focus are persistent back pain and anxiety relief.
Cool.
So that's with students. And then with teachers, therapeutic yin teacher training. That's pretty niched. yin is kind of niche, but not really. Actually, there's a lot of yin trainings out there. But because I'm a yoga therapist, I see everything through that lens. And so, of course, my yin training is different than kind of, you know, ones that maybe weren't run by yoga therapists. So a therapeutic yin training. And then I do business mentorship with teachers. And perfect to our topic, my real love and passion and strong foundation that I start with every teacher is figuring out their niche. Because I really believe that if you don't have your niche honed, then everything you do from there in your business is twice as hard. And it can often feel like you're spinning your wheels. You know, I can get into more of that as we go, but just kind of, you know, how much more clarity you get around everything when you know who you're working with and what you help them with.
Yeah. Thank you so much for even starting there, because I totally agree. It's like, if you have a really clear niche, your life just gets a whole lot easier when it comes to your business. I actually had a student who was doing that exact thing. And as soon as she found her niche, she's like, oh my God, I'm so inspired to create all this content and write these emails and do all of this stuff that before she was really struggling with. Hey, before we go any further, is it niche or niche? What's the deal? I want to pronounce it correctly.
It's actually niche. Sorry, cool. Americans. It's a French word. And so those that are French and those of us like Canadians and Australians that use the Queen's English, it's pronounced niche. Americans kind of like to mispronounce or change or customize. I'm not sure how to pronounce things and spell things as well. I'm sure anyone who's read, you know, Canadian and American English, they're different as well. Like different words are spelled differently. So they tend to say niche. It's not like a little cutout of a tree. It's a niche. Origins of are French. So yeah, it's pronounced niche.
Cool. All right. I'm glad I haven't been sounding like, I was going to say an asshole, but not to offend Americans. I'm glad I've been saying it properly the whole time. Hey, before we even, because I already have a question that I want to ask you that's not on my list of questions that I want to ask you. But before I say any more, can we define what a niche is so that everyone listening is like, okay, I have a grasp of what it is you're talking about. It's not just that I'm a vinyasa teacher or whatever. So what is a niche? And now I'm going to say it incorrectly. What is a niche?
This is actually, it's perfect because it's not what most teachers think. So I'm going to say what it isn't first, and then I'm going to say what it is. So it's not a style of yoga. Unless you train teachers in that style of yoga, then that's different. But if you're working with the general public, it's not a style of yoga. It's not a demographic, right? So it's not, you know, women in these age groups, for example. It can have those can be elements of it, but it's not that simple. To me, a good niche includes three things: who you serve, and as specific as you can get, what you help them with, and again, as specific as you can get. And then I also think the third thing that can come into that, which isn't awfully often talked about in niche work, is your point of view.
What do you mean by that?
So for example, I'll use my own as an example since I know it quite well. So I work with yoga misfits, right? So I have a very clear vision in my mind of who that is. I've spelled it on the website so that everyone else can see the vision of in their mind of who that is. And I help. So that's the who, right? So I work with yoga misfits. And then the what I help them with is back pain or anxiety relief. So it's like specific. And then there's my point of view that also comes into my niche and is going to be like all over my homepage. And that also helps to hone your niche. So I can give you an example. Just again, I'm going to just speak to my business so I don't feel like I'm talking about other people behind their backs. So for example, on my homepage, it says, you've been curious about yoga. You think it could help you with your back pain or anxiety, but you don't think you're a yoga person. So that's already going to be a certain group of people.
Yep.
You aren't sure yoga can be made accessible for you. Maybe you're not super fit or flexible. You're not sure you'd fit in a yoga class. And the thought of attending a public class makes you anxious. So again, speaking to my niche. And then I talk about the people that do actually go to a studio and have a horrible experience. And then I say crystal clear, if you believe that you need to be super flexible or skinny to practice yoga, are all about the latest yoga trends, can't get enough of hot yoga, acro yoga, and the like, are mostly interested in yoga because you want to detox, get a yoga butt, or get your yoga body in time for swimsuit season, or anything else along those lines, then I've got nothing for you. So that's what I mean by point of view. Like I just spend a whole bunch of time calling out some of the common misconceptions about our industry, but also some of the things that I don't like about our industry and the things that I definitely have no time for or no interest in. And then I say, but if you are more likely to wear Converse than Lululemon, have more tattoos than yoga outfits, want to learn yoga in a way that's accessible, welcoming, and fun, in brackets, you might even laugh in my classes, then I'm your girl. And then I go into a little bit more about my point of view. Just briefly, I'll read it and then we can dive into this. I believe yoga has the power to transform lives and change the world. I believe if you can breathe, you can do yoga. I believe yoga makes life better. I'm on a mission to make yoga less intimidating. And it's my honor to share these practices with others. So you can see how I spoke about who I'm serving, yoga misfits, what I help them with. And then I went into my point of view.
Right. So is it kind of like your... I don't mean this in the technical sense, but like your philosophy on yoga, like not your philosophy, like the philosophy of yoga, but like your, mm-hmm. I guess your approach would be another way to say it. Is that kind of the, what the point of view is?
Yeah. Your point of view is it's your approach, but it's also how you see the world.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
So the words that you used, accessible, welcoming, and fun, that's all part of your point of view, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
And then, you know, and then also you weave your point of view, obviously, into your classes. So for example, at the beginning of a class, I make a point to tell the students to thank themselves for taking the time out of their life to practice. And then at the end of the class, I always do an acknowledgement that we never practice alone, that when we take this time for ourselves, we're more present, patient, loving, and kind for our loved ones, our communities, the world at large. So it's like that also is point of view. And that's, of course, in my website copy as well, but it's like it comes through. It's a lot of point of view could be like, why do you do this? And why do you do it the way you do it?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Those are good questions. I'm writing them down. Cool. And so I can see that your, like, and I had a good peruse of your website before I sent over these questions, and I could see your niche, what I thought your niche was very clearly, which was the same as what you said it is, very clearly through the copy on your website and through the imagery and through everything that you put together. But you've been teaching yoga for a long time, and this question actually came up from one of my Instagram people. Is it ever too early to discover your niche? Or, you know, what I was wondering is like, how long did it take you to get that clear on what it is you do?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it ever too early? No.
Cool.
Not if you feel clear, it's not too early.
Right.
Right. Like if you're like, I'm just going to give an example. If you discovered yoga because you were battling cancer and you went to a yoga for cancer class and you fell in love with yoga and you got through your cancer and healed, it's definitely not too early to say, I want to teach yoga for cancer,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Like that,
yep, cool,
is such a clear niche. Sometimes though, it's not so clear. Like sometimes the, you know, and I have a group of questions that I usually lead people through, and we can do some of them if we have time.
Cool.
But,
yeah.
Because part of the problem, I think, with niche work, and I've taken other niche work from other yoga teachers, like workshops and stuff, mostly because at the beginning, I actually was just like, well, if someone else has got a great workshop, I'll just refer people to that instead of doing the work myself. But I just didn't find they were all so head driven. You know, like target markets and this and that and symptoms and benefits. And I was like, yeah, but what about the heart? Like, who is the niche hiding in your heart? Because that's the one that's going to be the most powerful. One of my friends and a mentor in business to me says that I don't know if he says your deepest wound or your truest wound. Your deepest wound, I think, is your truest niche.
So your deepest wound
is your truest niche. I believe that's the quote. And that's by Tad Hargrave, Marketing for Hippies. And so in a lot of cases, I think that's what it is. But sometimes it takes a little digging to unearth that. Like, you know, and again, I've got a whole bunch of questions about it. But did I come up with that right away? No, I certainly did not. When I started teaching, I'd like most yoga teachers, I mean, if you would have sat down with me, if I would have had a business coach, oh my gosh, if I would have had a business coach when I started, that would have been amazing. you know, if somebody would have sat down with me and said things like, when you went to your first yoga class, like, what was your experience? What kept you coming back to yoga? What difference does yoga, like, if those questions had been asked of me, I could have slowly put my finger on it. It probably still would have taken some time. And so, you know, I might have been able to, but for me, it was a little bit more kind of roundabout. I started working with back pain. I don't know if you want to call it fluke or divine intervention. I'm not really sure. But I have chronic back pain or persistent back pain for most of my life. I actually have a bit of a fusion on one side of my spine, and I was a hairstylist for 12 years, which is definitely not good for your back. So I had experienced that. And then I had a colleague who was moving away and said, do you want to take over my back pain? I had even done mentorship in like therapeutic yoga for back pain. So it was like, obviously it was on my radar. And she said, do you want to take over this therapeutic class, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, ugh, no. Like, I was a brand new teacher, right? Like two, maybe not even 3 years in. And I was like, no, I just want to, whatever, like a little half the flow. I don't want to get specific. I don't want to, you know, and I said, besides, like, I don't really want the pressure of having to deal with people that have just been in a car accident or, and she said, no, it's not that kind of back pain class. She said, it's like regular people that sit at desks. She's like, some of them might have an issue that they're, you know, healing, but they're like, the class was at a gym, you know, and it was in a, I mean, it was nice at a gym. It wasn't just like in the main area. It was like a separate room. And once you were in there, you wouldn't even know you were at a gym. And it was a registered series. And she's like, no, like we do regular poses. It's just that I sequence it around. And I was like, oh. So I subbed it for her a couple times and attended a couple. And I was like, yeah, I could totally do this. Like, this is right up my alley. I do these things in my own practice. I've mentored with this. Like, this is easy for me. Mm-hmm. And so I took over that class. And then, to make a long story short, that class led to another class and another back pain class and another back pain class and another. Mm. So that's kind of how it happened. Basically, they started filling with waitlists. So I'd add another. It would fill with a waitlist. I'd add another. So that's kind of how that niche just kind of showed up. And then with anxiety, that's actually more recent. My first yoga class was totally transformational. Now in hindsight, I know, because I wasn't anxious. It was the first time in my life where my mind focused on one thing. And it wasn't obsessing. It wasn't list writing. It wasn't panicking. It wasn't future tripping. It was just, and the peace that I felt after that class, I remember just saying to my friends, like, I'm going to do yoga forever. Like, this is it. I'm hooked. And so I always kind of knew that there would be something around anxiety, maybe, but I honestly didn't really experience my anxiety in like an earth-shattering way until I moved to Victoria, British Columbia, from Calgary, where I'm from. And I just went through a number of changes and a big move and was literally brought to my knees with anxiety. And that's the first time actually that I was like, oh, this is anxiety? Oh, because I'm what they call sometimes a high functioning anxious person. And so I just assumed that naively that people that had anxiety always had anxiety attacks. They were probably medicated. They were incapacitated. They couldn't get out of bed. You know, like I had all these ideas in my head about what anxiety was. And it wasn't until I went through some extreme anxiety myself that I was like, oh, I have anxiety. And actually, when I look back at my life, I've had it since birth. Funny that. And so then I always knew kind of as I was taking my yoga therapy training that this would be something I would add on. So back pain niche has been around for a long, long time, which I recommend if you're going to kind of do a couple of things, pick one and dive deep and then add later. Otherwise, you get pulled in too many directions. But when I took my yoga therapy training, I was like, I think I'm going to need to do some offerings for anxiety. I didn't really know what they would be. And then COVID hit. And I was like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
Like the whole world is anxious now. Like it's not just those of us that identify as anxious types. It's like everybody's anxious. And so I started offering some meditations and then some workshops and things like that. So I would say in every single class that I teach, there's a heavy dose of anxiety relief, even if the class isn't called, I call them yoga for anxious times classes. So even if that's not a themed class or workshop, it's a big focus for me. Just like back hair, it's like, even if I'm doing a class at a drop-in studio, that poses I choose, it's going to be a back hair class, whether it's called that or not. It's just, you know, I can't turn them off. Right. So that's kind of how I stumbled across those specialties. But then the who I was meant to serve, that one took longer. In fact, I had built up a full clientele of 10 to 12 classes a week, self-run with a wait list before I came up with trying to figure out who these people were. And this is why, dear yoga teacher, please don't get caught up in demographics.
Mm-hmm.
Women between this age and this age, because that's what I had in my head as a niche. And so I would look at my room when they were in Shavasana, all my beautiful student people, and I'd be like, okay, all different age groups, different tax brackets, different genders, different personal style. I just was like, I do not understand. What do you have in common with you and you and you? And this was because I built my business, and I don't believe, I'm going to just say an unpopular opinion. I don't believe you can build a healthy yoga business anymore the way that I did 18 years ago.
Which was self-run drop-in classes, weekly classes.
Oh, no, I think you can do that. But I mean, I was just like so generic and not niche. Like I just put posters up.
Yeah.
Posters up that said yoga Thursday nights this time with a website. Like nothing, specific. I really don't think that you can do that anymore. I think the days of being that general are over. It worked for me at the time, but it certainly doesn't work now. Now my posters are very specific. So I started looking at them all and trying to figure out what they had in common. And honestly, I did that for almost 2 years. Like just couldn't figure it out. Because again, I was looking at them from a demographic point of view. You know, age, gender, tax bracket, area they lived in, and was like, ah. And then finally, one of my students came up to me and said, I was going away to study with Paul Grilly for some yin training. And so I was taking the summer off, and he's like, okay, on the summer break, like, can you recommend some? This is older. Okay, guys, remember DVDs? This was like when we had yoga DVDs. Can you recommend some DVDs and stuff like that? And I recommended a few, and he's like, yeah, I've checked those out in the past. He goes, but they don't teach like you do.
Hmm.
And for some reason, my curiosity was piqued, and I was like, what do you mean by that? Explain like I do. How do I teach? What are you talking about? You know? And he said, you give us all kinds of modifications. I don't even like that word, but that's the word he used. You use props, you can give us a pose if that pose doesn't work for us. So basically he was talking about the fact that I made it so accessible. And he's like when I watch those, like those are yoga people doing those. They're not me. They're not regular people like me who can't reach the floor. And that's when it hit me. I was like, right. I teach people who don't think they're yoga people.
Cool.
So my first incarnation before it became Misfits was actually Yoga for the Rest of Us.
Cool.
But it still wasn't specific enough. So I'll pause for a moment because I'm sure you've got questions, and then I can tell you how I niched it down even more.
Yeah, I've got so many questions, and I'm trying to be specific with my questions, the ones that are the most useful. So something that I have wondered about and I've had people ask me about, and I don't know if I have a good answer, and hoping you might. Do you find when you're working with people to discover their niche, or when you're thinking about your own, that quite often you end up creating a niche around what you needed? Like, for example, anxiety, back pain were something that you found, right? So the answer is yes, right? Like, so is it diving into?
I would say 90%.
Yeah, cool. So it's like helping yourself. That's not what I mean.
Very much. My niche is 100% me before I found yoga. Like,
right. Okay, cool.
Totally. Also though, sometimes it's not you, but it's someone that you loved. You know, like maybe your mother had breast cancer, or your father has Parkinson's, or like whatever the case may be. But it's typically something that has touched your life in a deeper way than just hamstrings, you know? Because to be honest, this is not an easy industry we're in. I think we all know that. And if you don't really, really love what you do, it's going to be really hard. But when you could feel like you're living on purpose and you're really helping people that in a like tangible way that you're super passionate about helping, it makes everything else easier.
Mm. Yeah. And there's the sustainability in that, right? You find more fulfillment in it. It becomes more sustainable. And okay, cool. That's one of the questions that I've been wondering about for a long time and didn't really think to ask, but it came up in my mind. Why, we kind of touched on it, but like, why is this even important? You mentioned, I don't think you can build a business the way I did 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, so why has figuring out your niche and finding your niche become more important? If someone is thinking like, should I even bother? I just like teaching my vinyasa classes or my hatha classes the way they are, like a general drop-in class. That's what I want to do. What is the point of finding a niche or creating, discovering?
A couple of things. One, I would say like I said, when I built my yoga, it was easier to be a generalist. And if you live in a small community where there's no other yoga and you only want to teach in person, you probably can be a generalist. But if you live somewhere like I do, where there's a yoga teacher on every freaking block in this city, you really do need to stand out. And I'm going to say something that I know I'll get blowback on, but I don't care because I opinions are not always popular. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will say the yoga market isn't saturated. Mm. I disagree. Mm. I believe it is. But what it's saturated with is 200-hour trained vinyasa, et cetera, teachers. And there's a huge market of people out there who are not doing yoga that have not been reached by people. So I think the market is saturated with 200-hour, typically vinyasa or flow teachers. I mean, there's other styles as well. But what it's not saturated with is yoga teachers who have more than 200 hours, who have taken the time to figure out their niche and then take the training and get the experience to be able to specialize in those areas. That market is not saturated. So if you're going into a studio, especially as a new teacher, and you're, I remember when I first moved here, and I'd been teaching for many years already. And it was impossible to get my resume looked at. Like, I always know once they look at my resume, I'll get an interview. But like getting them to actually open it was ridiculous, the amount of hoops that I had to, and like tips and techniques that I had to try to figure out. And then when I was in an interview, I remember I said to the woman, oh, I actually applied about 6 months ago, but never heard back. And she was like, oh, did you? And she went into her filing cabinet and pulled out the yoga resumes. And it was like the size of a, for those of us old enough to remember, a Yellow Pages phone book. So, Right. Yeah, I mean, how do you stand out in that? So, and the other thing I will say is that if you, whether you niche consciously or not, you're still niching.
Yeah.
So you may as well be conscious about it, because you can't effectively help everyone. People are going to like you or they're not. People are going to love your class and your style and the way you phrase things and the way you sequence and all of that, or they're not. So why not be deliberate about it and conscious about it, you know, rather than like just shooting in the dark like I did for the first 3 years, where I was just like, well, I don't know who these people are, but they keep showing up, you know, which again, I don't think that would happen again.
Yeah. I just moved to a really small town where there is some yoga, but there's not heaps of yoga. And I had that same realization that it's very, very different from living in Vancouver or Sydney, where I was previously as a yoga teacher. I was like, oh, it's a different thing. I could do different stuff. And like, I'm going to run a beginner's yoga course, and it's just like a general beginner's yoga course. And I'm like, I've never would have been able to get by with that in Sydney or something like that. And it's interesting. It's just interesting, with different places. But yeah, I totally feel you on that. So assuming that there's someone listening who's like, okay, I get it. I need to niche. I understand. But where do I start? I had a lot of those questions come up on Instagram, especially from people who love all the things. So like, I love this and I love that and I love this and I love that, and I'm passionate about this and blah, 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 like all of these different interests. Someone on Instagram said, how do you choose your niche when you have 100 possible options? And so if someone is on board with the idea and they get the importance of the idea, but they're just stuck on how to start, do you have any advice for that person?
Yeah.
Cool.
One of the things I do in my niching workshop, which I love doing.
Do you run them online?
I do. Yeah.
Cool.
Because to me, having a good niche is the foundation of all your other marketing.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. How do you do your marketing without it?
Yeah. Like, if you don't know who you're speaking to, how do you know what words to use on your website? How do you know what social media posts to do? How do you know what videos to make? You know,
when things feel really hard is when you don't have your niche. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so it takes the confusion and the overwhelm out, right? Like, you less of an urge to hustle if you're clear. So I do have some kind of what I call like soulful questions. I would say though, when you ask, when people are like, oh, but there's so many things, all the things. The first thing I would go back to is remember that a niche is not a style of yoga. So usually that's the first hump that people have to get over, because it's like, if you imagine if you're a carpenter and you've got like a hammer and a saw and I don't know, all the things in your tool belt that carpenters have, and you're going to use the tool for the job that's in front of you. Cool. If you're going to hammer a nail, you're going to use a hammer, right? Mm-hmm. Yoga styles are like that too. I can teach many styles of yoga. I don't, because I'm particular, but like I could teach many styles of yoga. That's not my niche. Those are tools that I use to serve my niche.
Cool. That's a good distinction.
So I would say, yeah. So get crystal clear on that first. Who, again, go back to who do you serve and what do you want to help them with? And yes, the quote is, I just looked at it in my notes. The quote is by Tad Hargrave, and it's, your deepest wound is your truest niche.
Oh, cool. I wrote it down correctly.
So your story can be the key to unlocking someone else's prison is another wonderful quote that I love. And the scars that you share become the lighthouse for people headed for the same rocks as you. Another good one. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is, and this is mine, I share my scars so that you see that you can heal too. So here are some reflection questions. I won't give them all because it's long and cool. It's a whole workshop, but I truly believe the reason that teachers have so much trouble niching is because they're all up in their head about it and they're not dropping into their heart about it. And as soon as you can kind of unearth some of the heart intentions, it becomes easier. So some questions that you could explore, what brought you to yoga and why did you stay? If you could close your eyes, and this is an exercise I do with people, close your eyes and just picture you are in a point in your life where you're teaching as many classes as you want and not more and not less. And they're all full and they've got a wait list and you're making some decent money. I mean, you're not, you know, not rich and the famous, but you got some green juice and a vacation and some training that you can do.
Yeah.
And you look out at the room, who's in front of you? So that one helps sometimes. So if you could teach anyone in the world, who would it be? And again, don't get up in your head about, yeah, but would they pay for it? Would they, like, no. Back to the heart. I have to keep reminding, back to your heart. Here's another really good one. Sometimes we don't know what we want until we know what we don't want. Who don't you want to teach?
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes that's easier. Sit down with a pen and paper, write down who you don't want to teach, and then you can look at what's the opposite of that. I'll give you a few more.
Cool.
Before yoga, I was ? Since finding yoga, I am ? What do you have in common with your ideal students? If I could change the world, I would. What the world needs now is, who is underserved in yoga? And how could I help them? Other ideas that you might want to ponder are things like personal tragedies or events or defining moments in your life, times of life or life passages like births, deaths, divorce, empty nest, etc. An underserved community, perhaps. With that, though, I want to say, I'm going to speak as a white woman here. The indigenous in me is not visible, so I pass for very white. We have to be very careful, though, when we say an underserved community, that we're not doing that with our white saviorism and our tendency to virtue signal. You know, certainly nothing wrong with working with communities that you maybe aren't a part of. But I think we have to watch that sometimes, because sometimes it can come across you know, like you're trying to save people. And then the other thing is that sometimes somebody from that community is better to serve that community. So we'll just drop that in there. Another unpopular opinion, I'm sure. It could be for a very specific problem. You could ask yourself, what are you really good at? Like, what do your students say to you after class when they give you compliments on your class? What are the things that are standing out? Clients maybe that you already have, like maybe you have a client that you like, oh my God, if I could clone you, everybody would be like this, right? And then what are they like? And then I'll give you a couple more.
Cool.
A community or scene that you're a part of, perhaps.
Like what?
So So for example, with me, I'm not a tattoo artist, but I love tattoos and I go to tattoo conventions.
Cool.
I was a hairstylist. So I can reach out to hairstylists. These people suffer from back pain. So it's like in my niche and I'm totally comfortable in those communities.
Cool.
So maybe you're a, I don't know, a comic book geek, you know, like, or you're really into, I don't know, whatever it is that people are into. Golfers, right?
I mean,
So maybe there's a hobby or something that you're super into in your free time that you could then customize that as a niche. And then you're already connected with those people. So like golfers, knitters, surfers, just a few ideas. What are your passions and what are you passionate about? It could be a profession or an industry. Like I know that there are people that work with, you know, first responders or nurses or, you know, things like that. And then the last question that I'll just leave you with is, if I wasn't afraid to niche, I would choose There's a few.
Those are really, really good. And I think that, anyone listening who's struggling with this, like rewind, slow down the speed, write them down and start answering those. And I think that folks might be surprised, that it's not as far away as they think it is, right? Like I bet people have answers to those questions.
Yes.
But maybe it's just not been thought through or it hasn't been really specifically focused on like that. But once you start to dive a little deeper, the answers aren't that far away.
I would agree.
Something I did just want to pick up on though, the very last one where you said, if you weren't afraid to niche, and this is a question that I have gotten a lot in just resistance to niching in general. Two things come up a lot that I've heard, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about them. The first one is that when you have a niche, especially when you like figure out who you serve, you're not being inclusive anymore.
Yes.
And I'm like, I feel like you are kind of right when you say that, like whoever is saying that to me. I'm like, you are right, because when you get really, really clear on who you want to work with, it means that that's not everyone.
Right.
But you're not actively excluding people based on a set of characteristics or anything like that. But what are your thoughts around that? Like wanting to be
accepted.
Okay, cool. So what do you think?
And it was something that I came up against too, right?
Yeah.
But first of all, then I realized I'm not serving everyone anyway.
Right.
Like just by the nature of who I am, there are going to be people that are going to love my class and not, right?
Yeah, totally.
But yoga is for everyone. Yes. Yoga is for everyone, but you are not for everyone. I don't want to exclude people, right? You can be explicit without being exclusive. So what I mean by this is, I talked about my yoga for misfits, and at the very first line says Generation X and sometimes Y. I still get boomers in my class.
What's Generation Y? Who is Generation
Millennials.
Y? Millennials. Oh, it's me. My generation. Okay, cool. Okay, cool.
So I still get boomers in my classes because they read the rest and they're like, yes, me, right? And the reason that I specified at a point, the generations is because I use a lot of pop culture references in my classes and like I crack jokes. You know, people are not going to get my jokes.
Yeah.
If they're not Gen X and early Y, you know? So, and also I just feel a sense of ease and comfort and familiarity. Like I think most of us do, you know, not always with our generation. You know, I'm okay with, I mean, these generational numbers are pretty big. Like, so there's Gen Xers that are far older than me, but I'll still feel a sense of kinship with them. And I will also with early Gen Y, because again, there's a bit of overlap, right? So you can be explicit without being exclusive. So I was very explicit. Gen X and sometimes like that's super explicit. However, I still get boomers in my class.
You're not turning them away. You'd be like, hey, when's your driver's license?
Yeah, of course not.
I'm just kidding.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, or like if someone shows up and maybe they don't have any tattoos, I'm not like, you don't look like a misfit to me, out with you, right? I speak to it so that I'm I'm narrowing the field. But if there were people that read some of that, like maybe they do feel like a geek and a bookworm and that's enough, you know, then they come to my classes. And so I think that you can be explicit without being exclusive. And I think the problem is that for such a long time in Western yoga, I'm going to say, in the Western yogaverse, yoga was so exclusive and so unattainable. And that I think that now people are like kind of freaking out the opposite way. Like now people are trying so hard to make everything accessible, which I'm 100% for accessibility. Like you should please learn how to help the people in front of you. But I think that sometimes the most power in community can come from people being like-minded.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like, let's look at a substance abuse meeting, for example, right? You wouldn't have that meeting be as powerful for people who were trying to get clean and sober unless it was a meeting for people that are clean and
yeah,
sober.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's, you know, like that's pretty exclusive. That's pretty like, oh, you're not an addict? Sorry, wish you well from over there. And there's a power that comes in that kind of connection when people have similar struggles. And so it's not that you're saying, I don't like anyone who's not like this, you know? It's just saying that like who I feel the most kindred with and who I feel like I can do the best service to is whatever your niche is.
Mm, cool. Yeah, I think that's really helpful.
And this allows you to refer too to other teachers that might be a better fit for your person. I do that all the time.
Mm. Yeah, it's actually very freeing to know who you can help and who not so much. You know, like, no, you know, even based on what they're going through or what their issues are that they're trying to work through, be like, hey, so-and-so does a class especially for depression or, you know,
yes,
whatever it is that if that's what someone's coming to you for. It's nice to be able to have good people in your repertoire that you can cross-refer to as well. And that's another cool thing that we didn't talk about, and I'm sure you've seen this as well. But when you have a niche, you get more referrals because people know exactly who to send you.
Yes. And it makes knowing who to collaborate with clearer.
Mm, that's a good one.
Cool. Like, how do you find new clients if you're just kind of
general
marketing to everyone?
Yeah.
Right. Like, whereas if you have a specific, I'm just going to use, I don't know, the cancer one, it's not my niche, but as another example, if that's your niche, for example, then you know you can get in touch with the local organizations that are helping those people. You know, it makes it so much easier to network and to find people and other healthcare practitioners that you can have a referral relationship with if you're really clear on who you're helping.
Mm. The other big objection that I hear about niching, which I wonder if you have thoughts about, is people not feeling like they could commit to doing just one thing. Or what's another way of like feeling people saying like they'll get bored with doing just one thing? Mm. Have you heard this?
I've heard this, but I've never heard it from someone who's niched.
It's the pre-niche people.
Yeah. Because it's hard to imagine, like I can imagine what it might be like to go to Australia, but I've never been to Australia.
Right. Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's yeah, like that with, if you're imagining niching,
right,
you're thinking, oh, well, I'm only doing this. Like, ugh, I'm going to get so bored. But when you're in it, no, because then you immerse yourself in deeper study in that area. There's so many layers of teaching that I never would have been able to speak to if I hadn't specialized.
Right. Yeah.
So the teaching just gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and you learn more and more tools. And I mean, I know most yoga teachers, if they're anything like me, are a bit nerdy and they want to learn all the things all the time.
Yeah.
And we only have so much money for continuing ed. And so it helps you figure out, okay, where do I want to focus my study? So that's one thing I would say. The only people that I ever hear that from are people who haven't niched. I've never heard anyone who's niche say, oh, so over my niche, you know? That being said, you can, once you've dove deep and you've built a niche, you can add something else. Like I just mentioned, I've recently been adding anxiety because I was naturally including that in all my teachings anyway, because I'm an anxious person. So I'd be like, oh, everybody's going to probably need some of this. So it was happening already in little bits. And then I just was able to become really clear and deliberate and do workshops where I can connect with other colleagues who are also in other health professions that help with anxiety. And, you know, it gave me another avenue that I can study with. But what tends to happen in the beginning, I would say, just pick one for like a good amount of time too, like not 2 months, not 3 months, like 6 months, a year. Dive deep into it, get really clear, really specific, network with other health professionals if that's appropriate for whatever your niche is, and then decide. Like give it a good, honest, valiant effort before. But most of the people I know, the more they niche, the more they want to niche, and the more nuanced their teaching becomes, and the more passionate actually they become about it.
Mm-hmm. So how do you know when it's time to, if you wanted to add the second thing, like let's say someone is tossing up between two or three different ideas, and they're like, okay, I'm going to pick one. I'm going to pick, you know, I had someone I was working with, they were going to work with rock climbers. It was something that they did themselves and they were passionate about and saw it could really help the other people that were rock climbing in their community and da, 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 da. But then also really liked working with, if I'm remembering correctly, people in their mom's demographic who were like, I can't remember, like probably a boomer, you know, had some mobility issues, X, Y, and Z, very different class, very different marketing, very different
totally
niche.
Yeah. Those are quite different.
Yeah. They were super different. And they were trying to pick between the two. And so let's say my client went with the rock climbing niche for the first little while, but you know, down the track, she was like, I still really want to work with people like my mom. When could she add that without muddying the waters? Do you think, like, is there, you should have be this established or you should have that established or, you know, when would you branch out?
I think, okay, two things. I think that usually when we feel that urge to branch out again, it's because we're all up in our head about our niche instead of being in our heart. Like which one of those pulls your heartstrings? Which one kind of makes you a little weepy?
Right, that's such a good question. That's such a good question. Yeah.
Which one makes you feel like you're living on purpose? That like, yes, this is what I'm here to do.
Is that your dharma?
Doesn't mean you can't. Yeah. Like it. Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't want to get into Sanskrit definition.
No, I don't. I don't know. I'm just asking.
I'm going to leave that for the guests you have coming up at some point.
Yeah, cool. I think we will talk about that.
Yes. But so I like to just say my passion, my.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, also, I'm Buddhist and they use a different translation of Dharma. So anyways,
yeah.
But like who does it light you up to work with? When you are working with people, like who brings you to tears a little? So go deeper. When you're confused, it's because you're in your head. Get in your heart. Now, that being said, she could very easily, I'm going to just make an assumption. I don't know this person. So let's just say it was actually, no, actually, I really kind of want to do work with like my mom. Like, you know, that's who I feel called to. That doesn't mean you can't offer a weekend workshop, right? That's like a yoga for climbers. And you just don't make it a big presence on your website. Maybe it's on your workshop page.
Yep.
You offer it at a climbing gym. So you can still do something maybe in concert with them around that. But it's not your dominant thing on your homepage.
Not your main gig.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's a good advice. What do you think about being too niche? Is there a thing? Is that a thing? Like, can you be the yoga teacher for people who make purple knitted hats for their cats? Or like, you know, like
that one. Yeah, that might be a little too specific. That one's pretty specific.
Pretty specific.
When can you be? Well, I think if you, again, we'll go back to the example of if you're in a rural community and you're only teaching in person, you're not interested in doing Zoom classes and kind of building a membership or any of the online components, then honestly, you don't really need to niche.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, like you could offer your niche in like the odd workshop here and there, but you can be a bit more of a jack or a jackie of all trades in that case, you know? But if that's not your business model, if you do want things online, if you are in a large city where you do need to stand out and offer things that are more specific, then you do need to niche. But I do think that people that knit purple hats for cats might be a bit too specific. Because you'd have to be like, how many people are there that only knit in purple and only for cats? And so, yeah, that one might be, although yeah. I would like to meet this person.
They're my imaginary two niche person. I don't know why that's my thing. Awesome. So do you think that there's different niching in person versus online? Like, I kind of have come to a similar conclusion that in person, it's possible to be slightly less niche, because especially if you're teaching classes, because people are only going to travel from so far to come to your class.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that when you're online, it's like the more niche, other than the purple hats for cats, the more niche you are, the better. Have you found a similar thing with the in-person versus online situation?
Yeah. I mean, I teach right now in this moment, 3 in-person classes. One of them is self-run, so it's in a church. So I'm cool. In charge of that one, which I much prefer. But I also teach at a local studio, and I can't probably list my class at a studio. So my classes that I run on my own, I don't ever have them as drop-in. They're registered semesters.
Cool.
That's a topic for a whole other time.
Which I would actually really like to talk to you about at one point.
I am so passionate about that. You can 100%, we can do that. Yes.
Cool. Great. Mark it in the calendar.
So I much prefer that. And so my classes, if I run them myself, that's the way I run them. But I also teach at a studio. It's a beautiful studio. I love the owners. I love the community. And it's, you know, in some ways, it's kind of a little bit easier for me because I don't got to do much. I just show up and do my thing. And so, yes, my classes are sort of like not niched. Like, it's a candlelight yin class. Now, I'm the only one there teaching candlelight yin because it was kind of my idea, but it's a yin class. You know, on the agenda, it just says candlelight yin. Now, that being said, once people enter my space, are they getting a heavy dose of yoga therapy in that yin class? Oh, yes, they are, because I can't turn that off. Right? Like once you understand the nervous system. And so I'm always going to be teaching towards people that, you know, are anxious or, you know, and I've had a lot of feedback in that drop-in class from people saying, this was the first class that I didn't feel like running out the door in, because I usually get so anxious that I don't think I can stay. So I'm obviously pulling all of my yoga for anxiety tools into that class and speaking to it and, you know, offering, you know, which is, again, don't do it unless you trained in it. But I studied Chinese medicine for 3 years. So like I have some acupressure knowledge and, you know, I can pull those things in. So I'm still teaching it basically for people that are probably pretty anxious. I'm not calling it that because it's not my studio. Although we are, I think in the fall, we're tossing around the idea of a yin yoga for grounding because they have a yin yoga for immunity. And so she is quite good that way. But yeah, I mean, but I think online, I think you do need to really niche down. I think it's, especially if you're newer and especially if you're building, like if you don't have a large email list, one of the easiest ways to build your email list is to be specific.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hey, any last things you want to say about niching that we didn't cover? Like stuff that you're like, oh, this is really important and Cora didn't ask me about it, or I always see people struggling with this or that.
Just a couple of things to repeat.
Cool.
If you're struggling and struggling and struggling, it's because you're in your head, not your heart. So get into your heart, use some of those reflection questions, feel free to reach out. Because once you can kind of get into your heart about what you practice and why, it makes it so much easier. And then just don't be afraid to niche. You're not going to get bored because you're going to dive so much deeper into the studies that will support that niche. And you can add things later, right? Like it's not forever. It's not a death sentence. Like you could niche in something for a few years. And then, for example, I have someone that I'm mentoring right now who had just had a baby. So right now she's heavily in the pre and postnatal niche, right? She's 45, 50, is she still going to be doing that? We don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Like maybe she's so passionate about it right now because it's where she's at. I have another client I'm working with who You know, she's kind of approaching 60 and she does some classes that include a chair, but is now feeling drawn actually to offer like straight up chair classes.
Cool.
Would she have wanted to do that when she was 25? Probably
maybe,
not.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Right. So like, it's not a forever death sentence.
It's your niche like for now.
It's not like you, once you put it on your website that it's like on your tombstone. Like you can tweak it. You can change it. I mean, I went from Yoga for the Rest of Us to Yoga Misfits. Like I honed it even more.
Refined. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say give it a valid effort, like 6 months to a year, because it's yoga teachers. We really suffer from the shiny object syndrome and the comparisonitis. You know, we're on Instagram. It's like, oh, so-and-so's doing this, I should do that. And it's like, no, just like unplug from it all. Drop into your heart. That's where your niche is.
Mm. I actually have two more questions. I don't know if they'll be long, but if we go like 5 minutes over, do you have time for that?
I have all the time in the world.
Cool. Okay. So two questions. Number one, if someone does the work that you're suggesting, they answer those questions and they feel like they have figured out the thing that is tugging on their heartstrings. Like they've dropped out of their head into their heart and they're like, oh, I really want to do blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Then they finish that sentence with, but I don't know if there's a market for that. Is there any way to, like, do we need to think about that? Like, you know, are people willing to pay for X, Y, and Z? Like, is there a point where you do think about that? Or in your experience, if someone is passionate about what they're doing and committed to what they're doing, the people, even if there's only 100 of them around the world or whatever, they'll find them. Like, how do you manage that aspect of it?
I do think that unless you're being too specific, i.e. purple hats for cats.
Yeah.
Unless you're being like that specific,
yeah.
If you want an online thing, an online presence, you definitely will find enough people.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And you might find people who, so my posters at the top say Yoga for Misfits. And I had a student show up to my class and say, I saw your poster in a coffee shop. I saw Yoga for Misfits. I didn't even read the rest. I was like, hell yeah, that's me.
That's awesome.
Right? So, so you will... Those people, I mean, you have to, obviously you have to market once you figure out who these people are, you also have to figure out how to effectively market. But what I see yoga teachers doing typically is trying to learn how to market, but not knowing who they're marketing to.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they're spinning their wheels and like frustrated.
Why isn't it working? Yeah.
And they're never giving up their day job because they don't have enough classes. And if that's what they want to do, you know, not everyone does. So I would say it's definitely, unless you're being as specific as knitting for cats and purple hats, you're probably going to be fine. The key is you just have to figure out where they are then. So once you find your niche, then you need to talk to your niche because you need to figure out what's going on with them. What are their struggles and use their words. And then you need to figure out like, where are they?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Where do they hang out? How do I reach them? Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool. And then my second question is, I've had students ask this and I'm like, I don't know exactly how I would address that. So let's say they've done the same thing, figured out who they genuinely want to work with or what they genuinely want to niche to, but they don't have the qualifications for that. Like, for example, you mentioned a couple of times that you've done buttloads of study in your specific areas. So let's say someone's like, I really want to do yoga for anxiety, but I don't have a mental health background. But it's true to them. Like they struggle with it or, you know, whatever. It's genuine. That's what they want to do. What are their next steps when they like kind of figure it out? Is it like, okay, young grasshopper, go study. Like if that's what you want to do, go find your education, or should they start with what they know? Like how would you address that? Because I see a lot of people doing that and then not pursuing their niche because they don't have the experience or the skill set yet.
I would say yes and. So
cool.
Yes, they should go study. 100%. I cannot count how many times I see things that teachers are saying that are not accurate. They're not qualified. It's like something they learned in their 200 and they're just saying it like it's gospel and it's like, please don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with saying though, hey, I'm going to use my example, right? There would have been, even before my yoga therapy training, there would have been nothing wrong with me saying, hey, I've had anxiety my whole life. I didn't know it, but let's just say I did. And, you know, I'm not a medical professional. Like, I would always give the caveat, like, I'm not a therapist, right? But one thing that works for me is try it out. Let me know what you think, right? Like, you can share in a very casual, warm-hearted way without being an expert. It's a more trauma-informed way to teach anyway, because just because you've had an experience doesn't mean you know someone else yeah. will. This is why I'm so sick of seeing everyone talk about the box breath for anxiety. It's like that works for a very small percentage of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. and it's fine, like share that. But then like at the beginning, say, hey, not everything works for everybody. I'm not a mental health professional, but when I feel anxious, I do this and it helps me. Try it out. Let me know what you think. Like, that's a great way to start. And then yes, study.
Cool.
Study
cool.
and mentor with somebody who is highly learned in the areas that you want to focus yeah. on. And if that means that you niche slower, that's okay. Because it'll be a trickle effect, right? You'll start attracting people just based on the things that you say and do that are that niche, even when you're not waving your flag yet saying, hey, this is exclusively what I want to do. You know, like people that come to my drop-in class don't know that I have a specialty yeah. in anxiety.
Yeah.
They just yeah. come to my class and they feel so grounded and so much less anxious and they didn't want to leave the room.
Mm.
Right. So you can use your skills and your tools and you can, and again, I mean, I'm a yoga therapist. I have anxiety. This is a niche for me. I still always preface it with, you know, this stuff's not one size fits everybody.
Yeah.
Much like hats and pantyhose, doesn't work. So this works for me, this breath or this technique or this, you know, try it out, see what you think. If it's not for you, throw it out. If you like it, tuck it in your back pocket for later. You know, like I hate to use the word expertise because it makes me feel like I'm done, you know, but even when you have specialized training, let's put it that way. Yeah, even when you have specialized training,
diplomatic.
you're still always going to be open and learning. Yeah.
Cool.
So I think start with, hey, this is like, start by sharing your story.
Mm-hmm.
If it's personal, you know, like, I mean, you don't have to, no, please don't share when it's a wound. Share when it's a scar, not a wound. Like when you don't get on Instagram and start crying about your divorce. Like don't do that.
Not yet. Sometimes. No.
Yeah. Wait. That's for your therapist couch and your yoga mat and your friend's shoulders and all that stuff, you know, but when you've moved through it enough that you could guide people a bit, you feel like you're not going to be crying the whole time. They're not holding space for you. Then there's nothing wrong with starting to offer little bite-sized things like, hey, when I was going through this or when I struggle with this, here's something I find helpful, and just present it that very casually that way. Try it out. See if it's a good fit for you. Let me know what you think, you know? And then you do want to study. I think and I can only say this as someone who has a lot of study and been in the industry for so long, there's a lot of hubris in new teachers. You know, that saying like a little bit of information can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they learn about chakras and now they're analyzing all their friends. So there is much value in studying something deeply and potentially mentoring maybe with somebody who also has that as a focus. But it doesn't mean that you can't start offering little teeny bite-sized doses now.
Mm. Yeah, cool. And sharing from your own experience. Yeah.
Doing it with humility and curiosity.
Mm-hmm. I found that asking questions is always a good place to start with that. Like, hey, do you find that when you do this, this happens? Because that's mm-hmm. what I'm experiencing right now. And maybe you feel that way as well, because it's a way of sort of like broaching the subject without saying, I know exactly how all of this works, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you can never know.
You never know. This was so informative. And I think it's probably, I mean, who knows? People will tell me. But I think it's probably going to be one of the most valuable podcasts we've actually done for the people who listen to this show. Because when, as you said, like when you do niche, everything can start to click into place. And this was a really thorough, detailed, useful, in my opinion, discussion about how you actually go about the process and all the different you know, struggles or objections, pitfalls you might have along the way. But I feel like there will be other people listening who are like, cool, but I need more, or I need help. And I'm just wondering, do you actually work with people on this? Like you mentioned that you do a workshop on this. If somebody wants to reach out and go a little deeper, but have some support, how do they do that? Or can they do that?
Yeah, they absolutely can. They can reach out to me via my website.
What is your website?
Oh, okay. It's NYKDANU. So my name. .com. And then you can do /teachers. And then from there, you're going to see a portal that says business mentorship or yin training. You just click the business mentorship button and off you go. So I do workshops in this. I'm hoping to have one coming up shortly, but again, to keep this not time sensitive.
We'll see.
Just, you know, check out my website, get on my email list, because that's how you're going to find out about workshops. And so I actually do that in workshops, but I also do it. I do private sessions with people as well. So if people are kind of wanting to reinvent their business, like right now I'm working with somebody who's been teaching longer than I have and has just realized like I need to get way more strategic with this. Or whether it's somebody who's new and is like totally overwhelmed, like, oh my God, I need all the things. I don't know where to start. But I actually, this is where I always start with niching when I work with people. And in fact, I don't take clients who aren't willing to look at niching.
Right.
I feel that strongly about it. So yes, they can totally reach out, either a workshop or we can do, you know, do it one-on-one, depending on their needs. But yeah, it's something I feel super passionate about. And I feel like it just makes everything else so much easier.
It makes it possible. Like sometimes, yes. Like it makes it possible. Yes. I can, I think that's a really good qualifier for folks working with you. Be like, are you going to niche? If we're going to start with niching, I'm all good to go. Otherwise, check in with me later. Cool. And so direct people to your website. Any other things that you want people to know about or where to find you or anything else like that, that you want to share before we wrap it up?
I mean, I am on Instagram, just under Nick Danu Yoga, but we all know that doesn't mean you'll see anything in your feed.
Who knows?
Yeah. Totally. We all know, just because you follow me there, and you're welcome to, I would welcome you, doesn't mean that you'll see any of the stuff. So I would say definitely just hop on my website. In the top, when you go to mentorship, I have like a free PDF, which is a 5 mistakes yoga teachers make on their websites.
Cool.
And what to do instead. So you can, you know, join there, you'll get that. And then you'll know about workshops. And I always share other things. Like when this interview comes live, I email that to my list. So cool. You're always going to get little snippets, but yeah, that's the best way to find me.
Cool. Could I ask you one final question? It's a silly one, or it can be silly, or it can be super deep and meaningful. You take it however it strikes you. But could you finish this sentence? If you really knew me, you would know.
I knew this was coming too. Can I give you 2 answers? Can I give you a silly and a serious?
Please, okay. Please.
Let's start with the silly. I couldn't eat a ridiculous amount of pickles. I'm a huge pickle fanatic.
Nice.
My partner often says, I've never seen anyone sit down and eat a bowl of pickles like you will, like someone else would eat ice cream. Like just pickles. So there's one funny and silly one.
Cool.
I'm always that friend that'll be like, are you going to eat that pickle when we're eating out? And then I would say that the other one, if you really knew me, you would know. I look tough on the outside, but I'm super soft on the inside.
Nice. And I think that sharing that is sometimes useful for people when they're, you know, thinking about how people present in the world. So thank you for sharing that little bit of a deeper one as well.
My pleasure.
Cool. Well, Nick, this was awesome. Thank you so much for sharing everything you know about niching, or I guess not everything, but a good chunk of some of the information that you know about niching. And I really appreciate your time and for coming on the episode. And I hope people check out your website.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Business of Teaching Yoga podcast. If you want to keep hanging out, find me on Instagram. It's just me, my name, Cora Giroux. Or if you want to stay connected off social media, get your butt on my newsletter at coragiroux.com. See you next time.